Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. You heard there, the Bulls on WSCR. Yes, indeed, we are the flagship station of the Bulls. And you heard Brad Childress talking to us last month on the Mully and Hanley show after the head coach, Matt Nagy, was hired from Kansas City. Brad had retired and was retired for just over a month, right? And now is back as a consultant with the Bears, and it's good news and good to see that. He, of course, a former Vikings head coach and a longtime NFL assistant, and a guy that has been through the wars and is from here. Went to Marmion Military Academy, and look up his life. I mean, he's really had some interesting stuff happen to him, and claims that it really, a lot of the stuff that he went through as a kid was straightened out through high school, through the game of football, and his lifer, and a guy that has been there and done it at the highest level and really will be an asset for the Bears and certainly for Matt Nagy, a guy that that brings some gravitas with him.
Yeah, I mean, the chemistry that they had in Kansas City, it screams no-brainer, right? And that's why we were talking to Brad a few weeks ago about that. And and after we got off the phone with him, we're like, man, if you could find any role, I mean, maybe he wants to have some sort of retirement. And he said, never say never. It doesn't have to be in the building every day with an office and being on the practice field.
We tried to hire him that day.
That's exactly right.
We wanted the guy up at Ellis Hall.
Whatever.
We offered him a job and the Bears followed through.
Whatever,
thank God.
Whatever works for him, whatever schedule, whatever contribution he wants to make will only be a positive.
No question about it. And, again, it's not a guy that's ambitious to take your job or anything like that.
He's very comfortable where he's at.
Yes, a voice of reason and a voice of someone that has been there before and understands what Matt Nagy's going through in his first go round as an NFL head coach. And it's always good to have somebody that you can trust and that you can believe in. And it's a very interesting group that they've put together because, again, when we talk about Kansas City and the way they've gone about trying to get things done. Andy Reid, he's a West Coast guy. That's the system that he came up in. We remember him before he got the job in with Philadelphia. He was an assistant in Green Bay, and Holmgren comes from that family tree. And it's very interesting to think about him going to Philly and all the success he had. I think there was rumors that he might be a guy the Bears would interview or turn to. And I remember calling up there and trying to get a hold of him before he got the Philly job. And I got a nice call back saying that, he was basically going to Philly and forget about it. not from him, but from a guy close to him that I knew. It was interesting to see that happen and to see his success. And then he ends up in Kansas City, and a lot of people have gone through there and had some success, and certainly, you see Doug Peterson win the Super Bowl, and, he does it by being super aggressive. And we talk about all of these coaches that go against Belichick and how the New England, their strategy, whatever way you want to term it, they make these unbelievable halftime adjustments. They figure out what you're doing best in the first half, and they change it, and they take it away, and the second half usually belongs to them. And what happens invariably, and it's a very difficult way to continue to win, and it's one of the reasons I thought Philly might win that game, they then can rally and come back, and they can use their knowledge, and they've got Tom, and they've got all these things that they can throw at you. They didn't seem to have it very much on defense, but, man, they were unstoppable in the second half right up to the point where finally there was a sack in a first sack of the game and a fumble, and that was kind of the end of it, although they're still throwing the ball into the end zone at the end of the game trying to get to a point where they could do a two-point conversion to tie the game. So You know, it's they're like a kind of a I don't know, horror movie villain.
Just always, right? Always just like, behind
oh my
the
God,
door.
They're
always,
how did they get over there? Yeah, oh, my God, they're rushing out the field again. They're throwing the ball up. Oh, no. And I think everybody has that sort of reaction to them. But it's because they make these halftime adjustments. And usually, certainly we saw it last year, and we've seen it against Jacksonville, I would say, where teams become less aggressive.
Play not to lose.
Yes.
Got a lead. Let's sit on it.
We got a lead. Oh, we can hold on to this lead. Oh, my God, the lead's fading away. And then you've lost all momentum, and you've lost your nerve to a certain extent. You just are no longer pressing things. That didn't happen with Philadelphia. It wasn't just riverboat gambling, man. It was going for it repeatedly.
Fourth and one on your own 45 with more than 5 minutes to go, and
that was unbelievable.
I mean, as much as the trick play at the end of the first half is something that's going to go down to highlight films and be replayed on NFL films forever. That play, I mean, if you don't make that, and you barely made it, by the way, Nick Foles barely avoids the rush. Zach Ertz comes down with it a yard, I mean, barely a half yard to a yard past the line again. If you don't make it, game over, right? I mean, New England's got the lead already.
Yep.
And now they've got
5 minutes to go.
And they're on your side of the field. Yep. I mean,
and you haven't shown any capability of stopping them.
No.
You haven't stopped them the entire game.
They can run the ball a few times. At the minimum, they're going to have a field goal.
Yeah, that was the game. I mean, that was brass.
That's the one.
Right,
I mean, that's
there.
The one.
I agree. That's as we talked about yesterday, that it takes a lot of neck to do that, and by that we mean you're stretching your neck out. And if you just go ahead and put your hand to your throat, that's what happens when you stretch your neck out, is you are leaving yourself open to a horrible, horrible fate. So God bless him. It took a lot of guts to make
Doug
that
Peterson
call.
Would not be celebrating Philadelphia.
No, he
he'd be the second coming of Rich Kotite. What did you do? What brain cramp did
you
have there?
He'd never be Rich Kotite. I mean, he did get him to a Super Bowl, and he did. I mean, Rich Kotite, as I told you, we were in Philly, and the first play of the game, everybody starts booing. They go crazy, and I went to the writer at the time, the Philly guy, the beat writer, whose name was Kevin Mulligan, ironically. Ironic in that, I guess, coincidentally would be a better way of putting it. There's no irony. There's just, it's coincidence. Since I'm
sounds like a
Mike
great
Mulligan.
Man.
No relation. And yeah, thank you very much.
He's
Kevin.
Got Kevin's first name and your surname.
Bless you, son. You are a great man. And anyway, he said, well, they've run a belly draw to open the last seven games. it's the same
it's
play.
What you do.
And it went nowhere. And I was like, the guy's got no chance. Like, the first play of the game, if the crowd is booing and throwing
there's
things.
There's a national anthem and then the belly draw.
Oh,
it's
my
just
God.
Part
and
of the pregame.
It was so bad. It was just like, oh, my God. They are so – this crowd is uncontrollable. And they were out
70,000 people expecting it. I would guess the coaching staff on the opposite side of the field probably expecting it as well.
Just a terrible coach. He was really bad. Those are the darkest days. You know, there's been a few coaches that have been able to get them to a Super Bowl, obviously, invincible. You saw Dick Vermeil do it, and then you saw and then he burnt out and had to take some time off, and you saw Andy Reid do it, and they went to five straight championship games, and they got to one Super Bowl, and they didn't win it, and Terrell Owens went crazy about it, and then you saw Doug Peterson do it, and they won. So,
but you saw Joe Madden with the fallout after winning.
There you go.
I mean,
can you imagine losing?
You can imagine losing on a call like that.
All right. We'll bring in Coach Wannstedt next. We will talk to Dave about the Super Bowl, about the lessons that the league learns, about what you steal from their success. What does it tell you? We'll run Brad Childress by him. How important is it to have somebody that you can go to and talk to when you are a young and relatively inexperienced coach, as Matt Nagy is? We'll talk to Dave Wannstedt next. It's Mully and Hanley on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. Coach Wannstedt joins us on the Ed Napleton Automotive Group hotline with locations throughout Chicagoland. Visit ednapleton.com. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I am good. I am good. Yes. How about we had a Super Bowl game? How about that, huh?
You know, Dave, I can't imagine that was a Super Bowl game that a defensive guy could have enjoyed. I don't know. What was it like from your perspective? You know, everyone's talking about one of the great games and all that, but it really was, no offense to anyone, but it was a Big 12 football game, and it was, you know, back and forth, and there was a lot of scoring. There wasn't a hell of a lot of defense. There was one play. Very crucial play, that strip sack of Tom Brady, only sack of the game, and a huge play at the point. And yet, Dave, I don't know that there were many stops in that game.
No. What was there? Did New England punt once?
Or no, they did not punt.
No. There was one punt in the game.
Yeah, they didn't punt. They had more than 600 yards of offense.
One punt.
Oh, yep. Yeah. As a head coach, I think I was involved in a couple games like that. On our side and the other side, it's a nightmare. Obviously, that's the first thing. You know, if you get off and the other side says, "Geez, we didn't," the other team didn't punt today, and you're the defensive coordinator of the opposing team. It's no, you're right. You know, and surprisingly, the points weren't 45 or 50, so that probably eliminated. That's the only thing that kept it from being a Big 12 game. But I don't know. I thought it was a well officiated game for the most part. There were very few penalties. There were very few turnovers. I think we got to look at it that way. I thought it was a pretty clean game. There weren't a whole lot of missed tackles. I mean, I thought it was really a heck of a football game by both teams. I don't know what more you ask of Tom Brady, to be honest with you. I thought he played lights out. He showed up and played again. And I think everybody in the country on that last drive, when he had the ball before the sack, before the fumble, you know, the sack fumble, I think everybody was expecting him to get down and put him in position to get points. So it was a heck of a football game. The two things that surprised me in the game as I look back on it, one, I really did not think that Philadelphia could line up and run the ball at all. And when you saw Blunt and you saw, you know, Ajayi run the football and have success against New England, that surprised me. I mean, because that has not been their strong suit all year. So I thought the running game, really, which no one talked about with the Patriots or with the Eagles. And then the other thing too, I think you got to give Doug Peterson credit. You know, going forward on fourth down is one thing, but to have the guts to call the plays that he did, you know, I hate to say trick play, but an unusual play, and score on it. Boy, I just thought that was fantastic.
Dave, what'd you make of the Malcolm Butler thing? And as a head coach, you know, Bill Belichick's not giving you anything, staying true to the way he handles things. But what did he owe the team any kind of explanations? Does the team know what's going on? I mean, there it is. This guy is so, you know, invaluable to what you do defensively. And there he is in tears on the sideline. And he gets the one special teams play almost just to, you know, to be in the game book. But obviously he wasn't on the field. And there's a guy who plays 96-97% of the snaps.
Yeah, I promise you this. And when I was the head coach of the Bears, head coach of the Dolphins, and at Pitt, I had players that I did not play, or I did some, you know, and everybody on the team knows exactly what's going on. This is not a secret, and now it's starting to creep out. I saw something last night where now it was I think they call it a mild curfew violation. It's creeping in there. My first thought was, you know, he was sick and he comes back. And you know how it is. You're pressing, you're getting ready, and the doctors say you're okay. And, 10 minutes before practice, the trainer comes in and says, oh, you know, player Malcolm's not feeling good. He said he can't practice. And you say, what do you mean he can't practice? You know what I mean? And all of a sudden it starts. And then if there was a curfew violation, now on top of it, you miss practice because you're sick. You're supposed to be in bed resting. And now, I could just put the whole scenario together. And Belichick, I mean, that's why the guy's good now. He is consistent. Everybody knows exactly what the rules are, and everybody knows exactly how he's going to make decisions. So there shouldn't be a surprise, and there probably really isn't inside that locker room.
When, Dave, you bench a guy, though, and, you know, how does it affect the players around him, right? I mean, you know what you're – he played 97% of the snaps in the regular season. Presumably, right. All those other guys are like, well, we know he's going to be in the right spot. We know where he's going. you're in a Super Bowl, and all of a sudden, one of your guys isn't. You know,
I agree, Mike. I agree. I mean, that's pretty severe. If it was a mild violation, mild team violation, or something, I read, you know, and there could be more to the story. I could see not starting him. You know what I mean? Having him not run out with the team. I mean, all that stuff would be enough to get his attention. The guy's contract's up. In the back of your mind, you may be thinking he's not coming back. But, yeah, it's a Super Bowl. If he can help you and help the team win another Super Bowl, you do something to make a statement. But this was pretty, pretty drastic, obviously.
And you mentioned, Dave, you've told us often, many times, you know, that Jimmy would tell you don't get bored. You know, don't try to outthink yourself with the time leading up to the big games. And you mentioned the trick play at the end of the first half, and coming out with the running game. I mean, like you said, LeGarrette Blount was not a big part of what they were doing to get to Minneapolis, and then they're force feeding the ball and doing it really effectively. I mean, no one expected him to be breaking off the number of runs, let alone the number of yards on the runs.
No, exactly, and you know what? They probably. You know, when you look at what Blount averaged all year and the number of carries, if you were between their two backs, if I'm defending him, I'm going to say, okay, when Blount's in the game, you know, we're not really concerned about big runs. He's been more of a goal line back for him, more of a short yardage back for him. You know, where Ajayi, he's the back that's had the big runs, the long runs. So I'm going to make my defensive calls a little bit depending on who's in the game, to be honest with you. And so I'm sure that surprised New England as much as anybody when he had the runs. And you know, the extra motivation. I mean, he said that after the game. You cannot underestimate that, guys. It's an emotional game. Football is a game of emotions. We all know that. You get in there, and here's Blount playing for the other team. You know, who knows everything that was involved in him being released. You're not good enough. We got better players. And now he's playing against his former team. Boy, it's amazing what pride and what emotions can do in the game of football.
All right, Dave, hold on a second. We're going to get to Joe with a scoreboard update. Then we're going to ask Coach Wannstedt about Brad Childress joining the Bears, about the Philadelphia Eagles stealing a play from Dowell Logan's. Yeah, we'll get Coach's opinion on those things next. Let's get to Joe with a scoreboard update.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Hanley, Coach Wannstedt joins us on the Ed Napleton Automotive Group hotline with locations throughout Chicagoland. Visit ednapleton.com. I got a lot of time for the Napletons, and I think you do too, Coach Wannstedt.
I do. I was with all the Napletons 2 days ago. I had a house full of Napletons here, little ones running around.
That's
yeah,
great.
I got it's a good day, but absolutely.
Dave, we mentioned Brad Childress. The Bears have hired Brad Childress now. He is part of that coaching staff, and he comes in as an offensive assistant, obviously. We know that Matt Nagy is limited experience. We know that Mark Helfrich has no experience in the NFL. And when you're putting together your board and you're talking about your plays and you're going over everything, a great thing to have a sounding board, to have a guy that that you've worked with before, that you trust, that you know isn't out for your job, that you know is there to benefit you in any way possible. It just seems like a perfect type hire for a young coach like Matt Nagy.
You know what? I agree. I totally agree. I know Brad Childress. I've known him. Actually, we went back to had some recruiting battles when I was at Oklahoma State now. Think of this.
Wow.
And he was at Illinois. We're going way back,
wow,
probably before you guys were born. But I thought it was a great hire. And you know what? When you look at what the Bears have done with their staff, and I make this comment because I can relate to it firsthand. You know, obviously they find a way to keep Fangio, which I was, as you guys know, I was beating the drum for that. I thought that was as important as a head coach, really. I mean, from that perspective. And then Mark Helfrich, I mean, I know Mark well. I know him very good. He's a heck of a coach. He's a heck of a guy. So this thing, whole thing, and then being able to add another coach like this, I mean, this is big now. I'm, you know, and we talked about the story and we laughed about it. But I remember when I wanted to go in and add Ron Rivera to my staff when I was the head coach of the Bears, and it was a no. I mean, you know, in your contract, you were allowed to have 11 assistants. That's what you agreed with when I took the job, and that's where it was at, basically. We worked around another way to get them on, but my point is that, you know, that the Bears are looking at this thing now and saying, hey, if this is what the head coach needs, and if this is what we got to do to make us better, we're going to do it. So I applaud George McCaskey and Bears and Ryan Pace and everybody that's involved in approving this thing. Because, you know, without them saying, yeah, bring him in, and he's not going to be making him, you know, $1 million a year or whatever, I don't think. You know, but just the fact that adding another coach, you know, it's just another personnel move that I think is real positive.
So when you hired Ron, was that what the initial no? Was that just a financial thing? You limit up on a coaching staff? We don't want another salary? Because you would think, you know, a guy who played for the team would, you know, be welcome with open arms. And he did start as a quality control guy, right? As far down the ladder as you can, get.
Exactly, Brian. That's how we ended up getting him on, because they were making a big push to hire young coaches. And Ron kind of fell into a couple different categories that but it was a process. Let me say that. It was a process. So I really like the direction that they've gone right now. Yes, absolutely.
We talked
we
about
don't have enough, hey, let's,
I hear you.
Hey, come on.
I hear you.
We don't have enough time to get into
that. I got gotcha. You.
Yeah. Save that for August.
Yeah, we'll save that for the cocktail napkins when we're sharing.
We talked about the aggressiveness of the Eagles, and we also talked about this idea, Dave, that they collect plays. Andy Reid, that's the system. As much as it's a West Coast scheme, they collect plays and they run plays. And apparently, the play they got on the pass to Nick Foles was one the Bears ran against Philadelphia a couple of years ago. And they noticed it. They liked it. They were going to run it last week, and they used it this week. It's a Dowell Logan special. Of all the names being thrown around as guys you steal from, I think that had to be, for Bear fans, the last guy you expected. And this following Jordan Howard coming out a week ago saying that
we're vanilla.
Everybody knew their plays, and, you know, they'd be screaming out, here comes the screen, and you'd be like, oh, my God, I'm going to run a screen into a bunch of guys that know it's coming.
Right. No, it was. And Andy Reid is known for that, and that's what good coaches do. And, you know, that's Bill Belichick made the comment going into the Super Bowl that he was going to look at over 2,000 plays,
right,
which is the total amount for the whole season. And that's really what you're looking for. Now, whether this was something from a couple years ago, I mean, it would be the same thing. Or it may have been something that somebody ran early in the season. But it's got to fit. You just can't pull a play, or you just can't pull a defense and say, we're going to run this. It's got to, the situation has got to be right as far as down and distance. Area on the field, they've got to have the right defensive matchup in there. So it's more than just pulling a play, you know, for our listeners and saying, okay, we're going to run this thing. I mean, there's a lot more to it as far as matchups, situations, down and distance, field position to make the whole thing work. And then you got to make a commitment to it. And the way they executed this play, Philadelphia, I mean, that was not one, I promise you, that they put in and ran twice in practice. They spent some time on that thing and executed it perfectionly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They worked on it for weeks. It's like Mike said, they almost brought it out against the Vikings, but they had such a large lead, they determined they didn't need to do it and keep it in their, you know, their surprise bag.
Yeah, and that's what you generally do. You got to make a decision on these plays. And we used to talk about this all the time. I remember Jimmy and talked about it, because Jimmy wanted to run a fake punt every – you know, he just went fake punt.
And we'll
stop him on defense. Don't worry about it. But and we used to say, okay, do we want to run a fake punt or a fake field goal or a trick play early in the season, and then the team will look at it and they'll say, oh, we got to watch the fake, we got to watch the trick play, and they defend it all year long, even though we're really not probably going to run it again. Or do you keep it in your back pocket like the Eagles did? They were going to run it against Minnesota. You know, they had the lead. Hey, let's keep it in our back pocket. We may need it down the road, and obviously it worked.
Dave, obviously we talked about the catch rule over the course of the last couple of years, and Roger Goodell comes out and says they're going to take a look at it, and they're going to figure out what a catch is and rewrite the rule for next year. And then you get to the Super Bowl, and it seems like they started early. What'd you make of that? I mean, if that had gone the other way, and the New England Patriots had scored a touchdown, that the guy was juggling the ball going out of bounds, or maybe he wasn't, maybe the ball just shifted. But what did you make of that, and would it have been a bigger deal if it happened the other way around?
You know, I was sitting there watching it, and I was prepared for that thing. I said, you know what, they might see this thing. You know, because that was the big thing that they said about the tight end from the Steelers,
yeah,
right? That he was not a runner, but he caught the ball, his knee was down. He looked like he had possession, and then he loses it. So, boy, I thought that they called one way and called the other one the other way, and I get both of them. I thought both of them, the guy had possession. He was now doing this receiving. He extended the ball after he was a runner. He was an established runner with the ball. The ball came out. So, I mean, I saw, be honest with you, both those plays being the same in my mind, but they were called differently. I'm glad they called this one the way they did, because it was clear that he did have possession and he established himself in the playing field.
Dave, can you be an aggressive coach all the time? Doug Peterson's philosophy seems to be just keep going and keep going at him no matter what the situation. And a lot of people here in town want Matt Nagy to be that same mindset. You know, certainly John Fox is on the other end of the spectrum, one of the most conservative guys around. And, you know, if there's a punt to be kicked, he'll do it. If there's a fourth down not to go for, he won't go for it. You know, is there somewhere in the middle that is the right place to be, or would you err on the side of the new young philosophy of go, 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 like Doug Peterson?
Well, that's a good point, Brian. You know, when I was at the Dolphins, actually, I was second in the NFL in going for it on fourth down behind Bill Parcells. I remember that statistic. But when I went for it, it was fourth down and about 2 inches. You know what I mean? I was conservative, as you guys know. But I really felt like we could make, you know, I just had always confidence in us making a half a yard in some way or fashion. So I wouldn't say I was conservative, but hey, if the field position dictated, I was not afraid to go for it on fourth down and short. Now, he went for one on fourth and five. That's being aggressive. I mean, I'm not in that mode by any means. I think you have to take some chances, particularly when who's the team you're going against, right? If you're going against the worst scoring team in the league, it's one thing. But if you're going against a top five offense, as the Patriots were in every category, and Tom Brady's the quarterback, you need points, and you got to do whatever you got to do to try to hold on to the football. So I thought, you know, because of the big picture, everything involved, that the decisions he made were right on point, and I agreed with them, you know, and obviously that was the difference in the game.
Dave, we know it's a copycat league, and people look at the teams that have success and they say, what do? You look at Philadelphia, and they went into the season. They were, what, 7-9 last year. They get a guy in Chris Long that is willing to give up his paycheck. You know, what a good dude to he just wants to play. He didn't get enough playing time. He wants to play. And he signs from New England. You mentioned LeGarrette Blount. You get a guy like that that can be a jackhammer. They knew they needed a receiver. They get Alshon Jeffrey. The Bears, I don't know. And then you talk about, as the season is progressing, they realize, you know, we need more running back, and they make the deal for a Jaye. What is it? What's the takeaway? What did team steal from the plan that got Philadelphia to a Super Bowl?
Well, number one, who's your backup quarterback?
You know what I mean?
Can you not, that's the first thing that I would take. I mean, you know, can our backup quarterback, if Trubisky goes down, whoever ends up being the backup, can he be the guy that if he gets hurt, that he can, you know, give us a chance to win and make enough plays? Did you guys see that crazy stat this morning in the AFC? I was reading it this morning when I got up. Between Manning, think of this now, between Brady, Peyton Manning, and who's the third AFC quarterback? Manning, help me out here,
Big
guys.
Ben?
And Roethlisberger. 14 those three quarterbacks have been in the AFC championship game 14 out of the last 15 years. So, wow. If there was
so much
ever,
for parity.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, and how about quarterbacks? You know what I mean? That's, I wish I would have read that 20 years ago. I'd still be coaching. But, I mean, seriously, think about the if you ever underestimated the importance of having a quarterback and not winning games. You know, I always felt like we could, and we did, get to the playoffs, we can win games. We won a division with Jay Fiedler, yes. But how are you going to get to the Super Bowl? You got to have a guy. You got to have somebody that's special. And I think, you know, having a backup quarterback was the first take that I would take away from that. And don't underestimate, the Eagles defense didn't play great then, but they were a top five defense. Hey, how about this statistic? Ready for this one, guys? In the since they started playing the Super Bowl, right, 1966, the first game was in 67, but the 66 season, since the Super Bowl has been played, 16 times, the number one offense, a top five offense, has played a top five defense in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Since they've been having 16 times, top five offense faced off versus a top five defense. Before yesterday's game, Sunday's game, 11 times the defense won out of the 16. And that would fall into the same category.
You had
a top five offense in New England, a top five defense in Philadelphia, the defense won. So that would be 12 out of 17, the top five defense beat a top five offense in the Super Bowl.
Great stuff. Dave, thank you, buddy. We really had a great year, and we look forward to talking to you as we have breaking news throughout the season. And please enjoy your what do you call it when you go down to Florida and you have the good life and the rest
of
us are stuck?
I'm sitting here now looking at my fence. It's blown over by the hurricane. So that's what I got going on, okay?
All right, make sure. Sunscreen.
It's snowing and freezing here, just so you know.
I'm working down here. I know. I got to put my suntan lotion on and get
sunscreen.
My sunglasses and I'm going to work.
All right.
Hey, Brian, you and Mike are the best, and we'll talk, okay?
All right,
thanks,
take care,
Dave.
Man.
God bless. That's our guy, Dave Wadstedt. Fantastic.
He's
going to
fix a fence.
Always.
That's his day today.
Yeah. You know what time is it when the elephants – Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.